Okay, so for our last year, I'd like to hopefully finish up the Karka Olam, exception to Yehar Le'Avor, and then hopefully get touch on the Hanas Atzmo exception of Yehar Le'Avor, and then we'll have covered all the topics. We won't cover everything I had in mind to do, but at least most. Okay, so finishing up on the Karka Olam exception. So basically, we discussed within Karka Olam, basically, the Machlokes in terms of where it applies, the Farhesia issue, the Eros Chamuros issue. Then we went on a little tangent in terms of Rabbeinu Tam and, you know, his B.S. Akum, whole discussion, impact on the various different Yisurim. Now, if we get back into the fold of Karka Olam and first focus on the issue, what exactly is the nature of the tour of Karka Olam? How exactly does Karka Olam work, specifically in the context of the Aviras Chamuros? We touched upon this a little bit, but exactly how exactly does the factor of Karka Olam neutralize the Mechayev of Yehar Le'Avor for the Aviras Chamuros? Oh, so we're going to see the three different approaches in the Rishonim, in the Mefarshim. The first approach is what we referenced before, seems to be implicit from the Riva, and that is that the factor of Karka Olam, right, when the, let's say, the Isha, in the case of Arayos, is passive, basically, in such a case, the Avera, Chamura, is not Misyaches or Misyacheses to the Isha. And I point out, this seems to be the Pshat of the Rivam, and that's why the Rivam thought it was more Pashat to apply Karka Olam in the context of Averas Chamuros than it was in the context of Chil Hashem. So, the question is, what was the Svar Pshuta to apply Karka Olam to Averas Chamuros? And the idea seems to be that, again, the factor of Karka Olam, the factor of Sheval Taisa, the passivity basically breaks the connection, breaks the tziruf between the gavra and the maisa of Avera Edim. So yes, the first approach that seems to be implicit in the Rivam is that exactly the factor of passivity, the factor of Karka Olam, breaks the tziruf between the Avera and the gavra, and therefore there's no longer a mechayev, a Yehar Le'Avor for the Averas Chamuros, assuming Chumras HaIsser, again, if that Chumras HaIsser is not misyaches to the gavra.
What exactly is the question that we're trying to answer?
What exactly is the nature of the Torah of Karka Olam? Why is it that, meaning the B'makom Karka Olam, there's no longer a Mechayev of Yehar Le'Avor for the Averas Chamuros?
Because normally the Aver is a Aver of Yehar Le'Avor, and even before this would be even Karka Olam, so what does Karka Olam do?
Exactly. So the first answer is that, no, and once B'makom Karka Olam, B'makom Sheval Taisa, you're not over the Aver. The Aver is not Misyaches. That there is not Misyacheses to the person, so therefore there is no longer Mechayev. That's the first so-called simple approach. Yeah. The second approach is, which we had you see the Kovetz Aros, again, is Rav Chanan trying to explain Das Tosas, right? Basically, Rav Chanan is dealing with the Shita Tosas, as we've seen a number of times. Basically, right, Tosas derives the Heter Karka Olam from the Svara of Ritzicha to the Yehar Le'Avor of Arayos. He says, oh, just like in the realm of Ritzicha, right, the Sora dictates that you can just be passive, so too, in the realm of Arayos, you can be passive. So basically, the Rav Chanan is bothered by what exactly is the carryover of the Svar. It's interesting, like, the way Rav Chanan formulates the question, he actually invokes the chiluk made by his Rebbe, Rav Chaim. And he says, what's the shaychus? What's the connection between, you know, the context of Ritzicha and the context of Arayos. He says, Bar Ritzicha, where you're, you know, being thrown on the baby, he basically says, you're chetza, you're not involved in the Maisa Ritzicha at all. So how can you then, you know, learn that out to the context of Arayos, where you, at least you're involved in the Averot? So that's the way he frames the question. And the way he answers it, basically he suggests something that Rav Chaim himself was not willing to say, and that is the following. That basically the factor of Karka Olam, the factor of Sheval Taisa, basically dictates that basically you have to be Sheval Taisa because there is a stalemate between the factor of Pikuach Nefesh and the factor of the Avera Chamur. Basically, according to Rav Chanan, we'll read this inside in a moment, right? Basically, he says, and when it comes to the Averas Chamuros, it's not that the B'makom, the Averas Chamuros, basically Averas Chamuros are Doche, the factor of a Chayvan, and therefore all you have is, you know, the Averas themselves. It's rather that the stalemate...
Both don't apply.
Exactly. Or both do apply. Basically, it's a stalemate. You have, on the one hand, you have the Kuach Nefesh, you have a Chayvan. On the other hand, you have the Avera Chamura. So basically, since there's a stalemate, you can't do anything. Basically, you're frozen.
You can't do anything.
Exactly, you can't do anything. Therefore, you have to be Sheval Taisa. So basically, the Rav Elchanan's understanding of Karka Olam is not that, oh, you know, the Makom Karka Olam, you're not Misyaches at all. I mean, there's no tzirah between the Gavra and the Maisa, because in such a case, there'd be no problem of doing, of, you know, just doing the other. That's not the way he explains it. It's rather that, you know, you just have to, you know, you have to be Sheval Taisa, because it's a stalemate between the Avira and the Pikuach Nefesh. And again, it's interesting to note that Reb Chaim in that piece, in Hilchos Yisodei Torah, basically throws out this option. Basically rejects, and it throws out in the rejecting type. He rejects it. He says, Bish Lama, he says, in the context of the Sar of Maichazes, where you have the one Nefesh, you can have the one Nefesh having a stalemate with another Nefesh. And oh, because Ein Nefesh Doche Zuzu, so therefore a stalemate, and therefore you can say Sheva Taisa in the context of the Sefer. He says, in the context of Arayos, he says, you can't have this notion of a stalemate between the Avera and the Gov Nefesh. Implicitly, he's saying, Halacha has to take a stance. Which one is a greater value? Pikuach Nefesh or the Avera? It can't be that it's a stalemate and we simply have to be Sheva Taisa. So while Rav Chaim implicitly rejects this possibility, Rav Elchanan embraces and says, oh, Hagufa is the vart of Karcha Olam. It's Mechayev a person to be Sheva Taisa because when it comes to the Avera's Chamuros, there's a stalemate between the Avera, Chamura, and the fact of Pikuach Nefesh, and therefore you have to be Sheva Taisa. And we'll just read this inside before we take your question. Ariel, you want to go for this? Do you have the sheet?
Yeah.
You see the two dots, Vinir Lomar? Like halfway down?
Vinir Lomar. בכוונה דברי תוספות הסביר עלי דעה חייב להיהרג בשביל שלושה דברים החמורים אין הכוונה בפיקוח נפש נדחה בפני ג' דברים אלו אלא בזה הם חלוקים מן כל המצוות וכל התורה ניתן בדברי פיקוח נפש ומין דברים החמורים אינה נדחה לבני פיקוח נפש אבל בכל מקום גם פיקוח נפש אינה נדחה לבניהם וכי גאי גם לדעיק השני דברים שאינם דוחים קיים עלן שאל תעשה עדיף ואסור לו לעשות שום מעשה, כמובן רובין, פלוג, תדרבי את הרבה.
כן.
שעד עניין ועד עזיר ועד עזיר, ושם מבאלת שאינם מנוסף, ואין שום מעשה בפועל, אינה חייבת למסור עצמן, זה הרבה.
So basically, right, there's a completely different understanding, right? Basically, the idea is, there's a stalemate, and therefore you can't do anything. Basically, you're literally, figuratively, frozen in place, and therefore you can't take any maisa, which will take a stand on either of these factors. Again, approach number one is that it breaks the tzirif between the Avera and the Gavra, and approach number two is that it's just a Tumakum stalemate. They basically have to, you know, be frozen and you can't take exactly.
It could be that Rokhan isn't necessarily saying that they're of equal value. It's just saying that they're not doke, that they're not one of them is for the other. It's like we said in the Ramban. Like I said in the Ramban.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I don't mean equal. I meant, meaning to at least come to a standstill. I mean, Rokhan obviously is not even willing to say that.
I mean, the philosophical portion of the same with Rokhan was that, like, you have to say that one of them is more covered than the other. But like, we didn't say, philosophically, we didn't say with him Rav Chaim that you can't say that you could have a deal of Sheva Taisa.
Or at least sufficient, meaning sufficiently close to one another that you can't take a stand. And again, either way, I mean, it's not so different in this context. And basically, either philosophically, you know, you can't have equal values, or philosophically, it can't be close enough that halacha can't, like, just go with one or the other. Even the other one is still significant. You're basically saying, okay, even not equal values, it's still sufficiently, you know, awash to be able to say that a halacha won't take a stand and say, oh, go for this over that. And the client could basically be saying that either on a value level or at least on a tchil level, the client has to say, no, halacha has to take a stand and say that one is docha, the other.
Well,
either way, that's significant.
That could be that the client just didn't think it was a mistaber, but not necessarily that it's impossible.
Okay. You have to look at Lashon again. I thought he was saying it's impossible to say such a thing, but
is it Mashani can be the rabbis? Is it like it's not?
You can't. Okay, so I have to look at it again. But either way, Rav Elchanan is basically embracing that option and saying, no, could be you have a stalemate, you have an even wash between these two different values. So the third approach in the Rishonim is a completely different approach to Karka Olam, which ends up also limiting the gedder of Karka Olam, and that is that according to, we'll see, the Machamis and Muki Yosef, basically Karka Olam only applies in a situation where the Anas could force you to violate the Avera, either way. Right? So it's not just, right? According to the first two approaches, presumably it's just an idea of being passive. And therefore there can be a situation of passivity where even if they can't force you to perform the Avera, you know, there, it's still, as long as you're being passive, the heter is going to apply. According to the third approach, the basis of the heter is that since they could force you to do the avera anyways, either way, so therefore I think the svara behind it is that, I mean, generally, you know, the factor of pikuach nefesh is that, oh, the factor of pikuach nefesh outweighs the, you know, the avera in hand. And therefore, makom pikuach nefesh, we're going to be doche the avera. But in a case where, you know, sorry, scratch that. In the context of the big three, the idea is that the avera is doche the factor of pikuach nefesh. Okay, so this avera chamura is more important than the factor of pikuach nefesh and the factor of hechayt dehem. And therefore we say, oh, rather give up your life to prevent you from violating the avera. But in a case where, even if you want to give up your life, they can still force you to do the avera. So therefore, the avera, it's no longer a clash between the pikuach nefesh and the avera, because either way the avera can be violated. So basically, the avera, in a sense, like neutralized itself, because no matter what you do, the avera can be committed. Therefore, we say, oh, it's better to at least save your life.
So do we say that's where they can force you, or that, or where you know they, or where they will force you, and not something that if you know they won't force you?
Well, the guy is putting a gun to your head, but
well, let's take for whatever reason you know.
Let's look at the Rishonim. The Rishonim? Meaning, yeah, so they'll just look at the two Rishonim. Melchamas says, the way he formulates it, this is, you know, those of Hadar, it's, you know, on the Nun. He has a line in passing when he's discussing the Gedder of Karka Olam, specifically in the context of our next topic, whether Karka Olam, when Karka Olam applies to an Isha, whether it always applies to an Isha, or there's sort of circumstances where it doesn't. So the way he formulates Karka Olam, he says, "V'lo amar abaye Karka Olam hi, ela b'she'achirim onsin osa shetibal v'al teharik." So for, that's just the one they're forcing you. Me'achir shichon livo osa al karcha. Because they're able to basically force you to commit the avera, no matter what. So again, their Muhammad's focus on the cholin, and the assumption is that, meaning, I'm assuming to answer your question, the assumption is that they're, you know, if they're putting a gun to your head, they're going to force you to do the avera, and that's what they have in mind. And the Muki Yosef,
what is this cholin that putting a gun to your head?
And let's say physically, when it comes to an isha, you know, they could force her to be over the avera. In other circumstances,
but
they can't force you to pull the trigger.
Right. No. As when the Muhammad says, so what if she has the option to die, not do that there, she needs to.
No, because I think even if she wants to die,
that's the question. So what, I mean, what he's talking about, like if she doesn't have an option, okay.
No. The point is that in certain circumstances, it's, I mean, when we say, oh, either die or do the avera, if you opt for death, then they can't make you do the avera.
Right.
But in this case, even if you opt for death...
So what's the chiddush here?
The chiddush is that his explanation of karka olam is only in this situation. It's only in a situation where they can force you to do the avera, regardless. But if in a situation where they couldn't force you, then even if you're being passive... seemingly the heter will not apply. Because his lump, meaning, it's a completely different lump, this karka olam. It's not just, oh, passivity. Either passivity, and therefore, you know, the avera is not b'misyachis to you. That was option one. Or passivity, and therefore, you know, b'makom, a standstill, stalemate, you're passive. No, it's a different lump. The lump is that because they could force you to do the avera either way, there's no point in giving up your life, because giving up your life will not necessarily save the avera. Again, it's no longer a clash, avera or life. No, because either way, the avera can be committed. So therefore, you might as well save your life. It's a completely different understanding to what the heter of karka olam is about. Let's just read the Mimuki Yosef. Similarly, has this lashon. Anyone have the? You see a line? You see the Rimasa Hadar Mimuki Karka Olam on page Nun over there.
Where?
Mimuki Yosef.
Yeah, where?
You see.
Master.
Yeah, the Hadar Mimuki Karka Olam. A different version. Okay, is it Dear Maskal Bahad Darmin and Karka Olam? I might have a different, an older version of Karka Olam. What's the name? Anyone see it?
Vada Arminan.
Yeah.
Karka Olam, if you should call him a Hufuta?
Yeah.
Alkah, Dal Kopha, Vihiha, and then so it's not in Tap. Sharif, Shah, Shafilu, Shirot, and so it's
שאפילו
תמסור
תמסור
יחופו אותה לדבר אמירה וחיי גם נשארי, אפילו בשלושה עבירות חמורות.
We'll stop here, right? So it's clear, it's even clearer than Rukh Yosef. The way he formulates the heter karka olam is one where there's no benefit of, you know, giving up your life, because even if you give up your life, you're not going to save the avera. So therefore the avera has neutralized itself, and therefore you're just left with the factor of v'chaim behem, and then v'chaim behem, because even if the avera is docha v'chaim behem, that's only when the avera is at stake. If either way the avera is going to be violated, or there's potential for it, you might as well save yourself.
There's two things. If she says, I want to die, and then they physically force her, wouldn't that be a lower level type of avera, because it would be an even more extreme onus? Should be more of a chetza?
Interesting. It seems like he doesn't take that into account. Yeah, because you could say that, at the end of the day, you could still say, either way, as long as it's onus. No, I think he's asking just stam, meaning perhaps there's a value to giving up your life, because it'll be a qualitatively different maisa. Yeah, but it seems like you could have said that, but it seems like he disagrees.
Right. And then also, it would be interesting, maybe according to him and the Mohammeds, we would dafka limit the case of the Ptur Karak Olam if it was the Hanas Atzma. If it was the Havira Al Adas, why would they be interested in, you know, physically forcing you? Right? Well, the whole point was to see, let's see how much the guy cares about his religion.
I hear. That's interesting. It seems like they don't, so I would assume the idea still seems to be that there's still, especially from a shmad type perspective or a havir al hadas perspective, there, I think there might still, again, in their work, might. Yeah, it could be like, as long as they're getting Jews to violate, again, even on the lumdus, it's more of an onus, but it seems like there still might be a fact. Right here. And just one last arvah from Rukh Yosef, which is interesting, we've quoted this Rukh Yosef earlier, is that Rukh Yosef here explicitly applies karka olam to all cases. Bain Sharaveros, Bain Farhesia, Bain Shmad, and I think it's what she does. Because once you take such an extreme, you know, approach to Karka Olam, you say that, the whole point is that since it's only B'chiyai Gadol where they can force you to do the Avera anyways, you basically have set up a situation of Karka Olam where there's no longer a value to the Moser Nefesh. Or Lushitaso, Mukiyos is going to say, once you've reached this standard of Karka Olam where they can force you either way to form the Avera, and therefore it's basically just the Chai Behem, said of course the heter of, you know, of Karka Olam is going to apply in all cases. So again, Nukiyosef Lushitaso, to basically limiting Karka Olam to, you know, this situation where they're going to force you anyways, is going to thereby apply Karka Olam in all cases. Again, Aaron pointed this out to me, in all cases, Lushitaso applies it to Shmad as well.
Two things. First of all, regarding what we said, the Rav Chaim, said, Al Karka Flo Shaik, the Gilei Raya was low margin. So it sounds like what you were saying. And I can also find a case where you know that he won't force you to do it. I can use a case. Like a person takes has a bunch of female prisoners. Uh-huh. So he takes one out of the cell and says, be the mouse to me or I'll kill you. So she says, no, what does he do? He doesn't want to work, he'll just kill her and go on to the next one. So why would he go through all the effort of forcing her?
He wants that particular Isha?
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you don't mean she doesn't know. Yeah, it could be that she, from her perspective, it could be that he's going to force her to be rebellious with him, whether she agrees or not.
The second person.
I don't know. I don't want to get into the details of the cases. I think in many cases it's unclear if the person has complete physical control over you. It could very well be that they're, you know, from the onset, you know, the perspective could be, okay, either way, the affair is going to be committed, it's going to be violated, because I have no choice, I have no ability, you know, to basically withstand the pressure, and therefore the only factor that's left is v'chaipa. We have a lot to cover, I just want to get too caught up. Basically, in the day, we basically saw three different approaches to the tour of Karka Olam, either that it breaks the tzirah between the Ma'aseh and the Gavra, or it's just a factor of Sheva HaTaisa, because in Good Makom, you know, the standstill between the Avera Chamura and the factor of Kluch Nefesh Lash B'chai Behem. And this third one is that, basically, where they, since they can force to do the Avera either way, it basically has neutralized the factor of the Avera and basically left B'chai Behem standing on its own.
Those are B'chai, this is just a stop Nima, right?
The question is, how does it manifest itself? Even.
Those are just stop, like, because we see Mashimatsino there.
No, but that ends up being.
Is
That's a different issue in terms of what the nature of the limit is. And we're discussing now not what the nature of the limit is, but what bottom line.
Yeah.
What is the nature of Torah Karka Olam?
So it's Shev Al Tassel, but again, the difference between Rechayim and Korvaz Ars is that Korvaz Ars says it makes sense for Shev Al Tassel and Gil Ars, while the Rechayim says it doesn't make sense for Shev Al Tassel and Gil Ars.
That's because
it's not a limit.
But that was explaining Rama, who rejects Karka Olam.
He was explaining Rechayim's explanation of Tosfos.
No, the part where the limud, which is different, that's within Rambam, who rejects Karka Olam. The way
you want to say that he holds that the Rambam holds that really it's like.
And the way he explains Rambam is that because you don't have this factor, you don't have the svar of a standstill, so therefore Al Korcha the limud is different.
So what does Tosfos hold according to the
Tosfos? The Tosfos Pashas holds to the Shev Al Tassel idea.
Yeah, but why is the Shev Al Tassel? What, because it's equal, or because Stav is Shev Al Tassel? Just Stav limud.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying that's how he was different from the Kovas Ha'aros. I mean, it ended up being the same thing in terms of Shev Al Tassel.
Okay, it's still approach number two of just Mechayev Shev Al Tassel. That's the most important thing for our purposes. How he gets to it might be a little different. At the end of the day, it's still a Shev Al Tassel. Again, there are still three approaches. Again, is it, you know, about breaking the Tzirif to the Avera, which is Shev Al Tassel, or is it this factor that can force you anyways? Okay, moving on. So the second issue within Karka Olam I'd like to discuss is the factor of does it always apply to Nashim? Or perhaps is it like built in naturally, you know, because of her role within the case of Arias? I mean, because of her passive role in the Maisa Bia, therefore it's always a Karka Olam, and therefore you never have a case of Teharig Val Tavor? Or no, there could even be cases of Teharig Val Tavor because Karka Olam is limited.
On which one of the three you asked for that?
I'm not sure if it. We'll get to that. We'll get there. First, we'll see, and then we'll connect. Yes, you're right. So this all comes from the Lush and the Gemara. All right, this all starts from the Lush and the Gemara, and Ayin Dalad, Amud Aleph. If you look closely, the Gemara is deriving the din of Yehari Vayavor from Ritzicha to Arayos. The Lushan that we have is as follows. It says, "Umakish Naram Rasla Rotzeach, Ma Rotzeach Yehareg Val Yavor, Avnan Rasa Tehareg Val Tavor." So our Lashon, the Lashon Ar Gemara is Tehareg Val Tavor, which means there is a, it implies that there is a case where the Isha herself will be subject to Tehareg Val Tavor.
Interesting. The Agod Yitzion don't change it.
Interesting. Because we'll see, there's some Rishonim.
Yeah.
I guess it's not based on Gersos. It's rather just based on their pens, as they say. Oh. So basically, that's where it all starts from. The question is, our Gemara seems to imply that there are cases, but this is going to bring Rishonim who are basically going to change the Gersa on their own. Oh. So let's go through the two approaches. The first approach, which is going to say, which is going to change the Gersa and say, no, basically, Maisa Bia of an Isha is by definition Karka Olam, and therefore the Heter of Karka Olam always applies to Nashim. Therefore, according to this, there is never going to be a Teharig Bal Tavor by Nashim, by Arayos, because all Nashim are always considered Karka Olam. Therefore, they're going to change this Girsa to not Teharig Bal Tavor, but rather to Yehareg Bal Yavor. So this approach is explicitly accepted by the first day on Tosas Psach. Right, Tosas Psach and Chapey on the base. Basically, the first day says, it's the same Gemara. And Tosas in the first day says, you must change the Girsa from Teharig Bal Tavor to Yehareg Bal Yavor because there is never an application of the Din Yehareg Bal Yavor to Nashim.
So, what about the case of Tavila and Arba?
The implication, we'll get to in a second, the implication seems to be, especially in the contrast between the two Deos there, that even the case of Tavila and Arba, that is considered a Karkol, and we'll get to the Lumdus in just a moment. Just to bring other Shitos as well. Then you also have Aratosos. Again, both Aratosos on Ayin Dalam and Beis, Ha Esther for Hesya Havai, and Tosos and Ksubis, Belichish Lehuda Onishari and Beis. Both, if you read carefully when they're discussing the case of Ya'al, they basically both apply the Heter of the fact of the Ptur of Karka Olam to the case of Ya'al, even though, you know, she is the one who is very active in seducing Sisera. Alright, so if you look, if you just look at the Gemara at Aratosis quickly, right, it's clear, and Tosis basically says, therefore, because the fact of Karka Olam clearly applies to Yao, and the Gemara is challenging the case of Yao, it can't be challenging to say, oh, therefore she should have been Tarek Batavor, because what do you mean? That's a case of Karka Olam. So it must be that the Gemara is just challenging whether she was an Avera really Lishma. Basically, it's like a very localized question, right? Since the Gemara earlier said, oh, she was in the paradigmatic case of an Avera Lishma, which is Gedola, which is Gadol, May, you know, Mitzvah Shelo Lishma, and the Gemara is saying, what do you mean? Why is it considered an Avera Lishma? Didn't she get Hana out of it? And that's all the question really is. Aaron, you want to read for us quickly? See, meaning the second word in line. So our first word in line is as atzmo. We're starting from hal de para, parak mitzvah chalitza.
First word line is what?
You just see. You see when it says a mitzvah chalitza, and then the parentheses it says sham taf kuf gimel.
Yes.
So starting from there, v'hal de para. This is right after the Rivam introduces the heter karka olam. Right, and he points out, oh, that if for sure the heter karka olam applies to arayos. This is what he says.
V'hal de para, parak mitzvah chalitza, gabe yael, v'ha kam es hanya me'avera. Roshani Tobasan Shah Shaim Rahi Tosadikin. Dikshaba Nahash Al Khaba Hitil Bazuma. Low by the Neymar the Mahai Taima Haya Law Limsor Atma, Avabishi Karka Ola, Rishum Dehada, Kashiva Kamaisa to the Darish, Beferek Hamediah.
Right, so what is he saying? Is it don't say that basically the Gemara is undermining the heter of Karka Olam, which should apply to her. Right? Clearly saying that no, she is Karka Olam. Why not? To Imkain.
Imkain, Rishbatin Nami Pavale the Akshuye Gabe Esther.
Basically, because that undermines the whole heter of Karka Olam, which would apply to Esther as well. So he's basically assuming that Yaal was Karka Olam, and therefore the Gemara can't be saying that this factor of Hana undermines Karka Olam, because then it always undermines Karka Olam. That would apply to Esther as well. We'll stop there. Basically, and running out of time here. So basically, so it's clear from Tosos that he applies the characterization of Karka Olam to Yaal, and therefore we'll see, in the Hamshach, as you read this morning, he basically says, oh, reinterprets the Gemara. It's only, you know, challenging the Gemara's characterization of Yaal as an Avera Lishma. What do you mean it's Lishma? She got Hana. Answer is no. Meaning, in such situations, you don't really get Hana. Fine. But again, this seems to be another case where an Isha, again, who's Tavila Erba for sure, where she's active in, you know, the Maisa Bia, or at least the Hechsher, you know, leading up to the Bia, and yet we apply Karkol. So again, Tosas, the first day in Tosas Mitzachem, and these Bali Tosas seemingly applying Karka Olam even in cases where she is taking an active role, at least in, you know, the events preceding, leading up to the Bia. And the third Shita in this regard is a very strange Shiltos that you read this morning. So if you want to have it, just we'll do the bottom two lines there. So we're not going to translate that, but the idea again, it seems to be that the way he's formulating Karka Olam, as one of my father-in-law said as well, is that it's not referring to her particular role in the particular case. It's rather referring to the natural role of Nashim in regards to the Maisa Bia. And basically saying that basically because they play a passive role, you know, in the Maisa Bia, parallel to, you know, the way, you know, land is passively worked by man, basically just highlighting that basically naturally the role of the Isha in regards to the Maisa Bia is passive, and therefore by definition, the Isha's role in the Maisa Bia is one of Karka Olam. So basically, what all these Shitos seem to be assuming is that, just conceptually, what's going on is that they're basically saying that even a case, well, I mean, use halakha terminology, where the Hechsher is Bekum Ba'aseh, as long as the Maisa Avera itself is B'Shei Bal Taisa, the Avera has the status of Shei Bal Taisa. Basically, the Lamdas is, and the Machlokas between these two general camps, is the case where you have the Avera itself, or the Maisa itself, being let's say b'sheva atas. But the hechsher is b'kum ba'aseh. Does that hechsher b'kum ba'aseh, you know, transform the ma'isa avera to also being kum ba'aseh, or no? You say you have a hechsher b'kum ba'aseh, but the ma'isa itself is b'sheva atas. So there's all these rishonim, all right. Bali Tosos and Shiltos are all basically the same. But since when it comes to the actual Maisa Bia, she's passive, no matter what role she plays leading up to it, that's all limited to the Heksher, but the Maisa Bia itself is Betoras Karka Olam. And that's the way they're understanding, and that's why they're going to justify, you know, always applying this Heter of Karka Olam to all cases, even when it's Tavi Alei Erva, or in the case of Yal, in all cases. And there's one other Nakuda within this approach, is that within this approach, that basically an Isha is always considered to be lacking a Maisa in regards to Maisa Bia. Right, so the question is, then what, how is she ever going to be, say, Chayev Misa in the realm of Pergila Rites? Right, we know the Drasha, the Tosas quotes, right, the Nichrasu HaNefashos HaOsos, and when she gets Hana, she's all of a sudden Chayev Misa. The question is, what do you mean? What is this role of Hana? What's the relationship between this Hana and the mice? So there are two general approaches to understand the role of Hana here, right? Despite seemingly the lack of a mice. Either you're going to say that the chiddush din is that the mechayiv of misa for an isha is the Hana, meaning you don't need a mice. Because according to this approach, an isha can never have a mice when it comes to a mice bia, because she's always considered passive. So therefore, the lone mechayiv is the Hana. That's one approach. The other approach is to be mechalish and say that no, when it comes to the realm of onshin, the hana is mitzarev her to the maisa, and when she derives hana from the case, that basically is mitzarefes the isha to the maisa, and therefore it dictates, and the chiddush coming out of this second approach, that even though from the realm of in Zehar Vayavor we don't think that she's involved in the maisa, but from the realm, from the perspective of the Chiyav Misa, from the realm, from the perspective of Onshin, we do think that she has been involved in a Maisa. So again, this gets back to your point earlier, this might tie back to what exactly is the role of Karka Olam when it comes to Har Gleyavah. For example, if you take the simple Sheva Taisa approach, then this can make sense. Because from the perspective of Har Gleyavah, as long as you were not seen as being taking an active role, you're fine. It doesn't matter that halachically, you know, we are mitzarev, the ma'isa, to the gavra. Mm-hmm. As long as you were passive, that suffices. So according to, let's say, the Kovetz Ha'aros type approach, to have this dichotomy, to have this chiluk and say, oh, right, from the perspective of Yehara Vayavor, you're karka olam, but yet from the perspective of the onish misa, you're, you know, the ma'isa is mitzarev to you, that can work. But again, if you take the first approach, like the Rivam, the whole vart of Karka Olam, is that it breaks the tziruf of the Maisa to the Gavra. So then, the only way to say this idea is to say that there's a different geder of tziruf between the Maisa and the Gavra from the perspective of Yehari Layavor than there is from the perspective of Onshin. That would be a big chiddush. Okay, Rivam can simply the first approach to say that, you know, that the Hana is mechayev. But again, it's important in light of, you know, this sugya of Yehari Layavor and the realm of Karka Olam to then go back and understand, so what exactly again is the mechayev of Misa in the case where she gets Hana. So again, either the Hana is mechayev in itself, or the Hana is mitzarev, you know, her to the Misa, and again, which has the implications. And just to note, at least this Chakira, whether, you know, Hana is mechayev in of itself, or it's mitzarev to the Misa, is a similar lumdus when it comes to another klal. Right? There's a tour of mizasek. Right? Generally, you know, if you say you turn on a light in Shabbos, or you brush against the wall, you turn on a light. Generally, that's an idea of mizasek. And the general lumdus of mizasek is that in such a case where you have complete das regarding the Misa, that the Misa is not mitzarev to the person. That's the general understanding of mizasek. The question is, there's a big exception to mizasek, called, in the case of misasek bechalavim va'arayos, right? If you're misasek when it comes to eating something or a ma'isa bia, the Gemara says, "Oh, misasek bechalavim va'arayos is still chayev shekein ne'aneh, because you got hana in these cases of achila and bia." See, here too, you have the same.
If you turn on the light and you were ne'aneh from the light now,
that's that. I think that's after the fact. It's not related to the ma'isa itself. So here, the question is, because the ma'isa itself was one of hana, that's the idea. And here too, we have Mefarshim taking these two types, this chakira. is a shekinen when it comes to misasik, is saying, oh, Ava Pita to misasik, the Maisa Avera is not misachis you at all. Ava Pikin shekinen, the Machayev is the Hana, and you're Chayev because of the Hana, despite the lack of Maisa. Or do we say shekinen, that says in this context, the Hana is mitzari if the Maisa to you? That because you were nene from the Maisa, so you can't claim that, you know, that the Maisa is completely not mitzurah to you, because what do you mean you got Hana from it? So again, these two options, whether viewing the Hana as an independent Mechayev, or viewing the Hana as, you know, the, as a mitzarev to the Maisa, again, is also the parallel on this when it comes to Ms. Asik and the exception of Shekinah. So Adkan, again, is the first approach in the sugya of Karka Olam, in the sense that basically the Karka Olam always applies to Nashim, because it's built into the basically the nature of the role of Nashim in Maisa Bia, because they're always passive, and the basic alumnus, as we pointed out, is that even when they play an active role in regards to the Hechsher, that doesn't carry over and impact the Geder of the Maisa Bia itself.
Just to clarify, so you're saying according to the Rivam, it would make more sense to understand the general Pivis and Arias according to option A?
Exactly. And if you were to take option B, you'd have to have this Chiddush to say that there's a different Geder of Tziruv. Yeah, that's what you have to do. It ends up being a big switch. Oh. So the second approach is that now, while certain cases of the Bia and Isha is Karka Olam, there are cases where if she plays an active role in the Maisa Bia, or at least in the events leading up to the Maisa Bia, that she will not have the heter of Karka Olam. So in fact, right, the second Deya in Tosos Himsachim, Chatayim Veis, says, oh, the Girsa of Tehara Baltavar makes sense. Because there are cases where she is subject to Harag Baltavar. Let's say the case where they say, oh, basically, I'll shoot you. If you do not basically, if you do not basically take an active role in bringing the man upon you. So that's a case where she is active in terms of the Hechsher to the Bia. According to this approach, her active role in the Hechsher basically carries over and transforms the way we characterize the Maisa itself. And therefore, since, even though she's passive in regards to the Maisa itself, since she takes an active role in terms of the Hechsher, that active Kumbasai Hechsher transforms the Maisa as well. Which is a very interesting Kol Torah Kula idea of what's the relationship between the Hechsher Avera and the Avera itself, or even the Hechsher Mitzvah and the Mitzvah itself. And just a parallel, the Sugya of Tkiya Shofar, where there's a whole lumdus in terms of, you know, whether the Mitzvah of Tkiya Shofar, getting into hell. Right, whether the lundas of Tkiya Shofar is the mitzvah and the shmiya, or is it the tkiya. So some say that it's really both. The gedra of the mitzvah is both the tkiya and the shmiya. So the Abne Nezer takes this approach, and the way he justifies it, again, as well as Abne Nezer, I remember thinking about this sugya of Yavor, he says as follows. Because the problem with shmiya, the mitzvah being limited to shmiya, is that basically, I think he uses the lashon, you're misasik in regards to the Shmiyah. You don't play an active role in terms of the Shmiyah. And he says, that would be a problem to have a mitzvah where you do not actively involve yourself in the mitzvah. Therefore, he says, basically, the way he says it is that you have the tekiah, basically, your active role in the tekiah thereby transforms your role in the Shmiyah itself. So basically you have this lumdus where you have, again, that's on a mitzvah level, where your kumba asay involvement in the hechsher transforms even the maisa itself. So again, remember when seeing that Avnei Nezer, thinking back to this, so you get exactly this lumdus, where according to the second approach, they think exactly that idea, that your active kumba asay in the hechsher transforms your role even in the avera itself. And again, and that would be the lumdus of the because the second day in the Tosas Pesachim, then again, when you're actively evolved in the Hechsher, the Shetavi Olei Erva, that makes you, basically, you know, that neutralizes the Heter of Karka Olam, and basically dictates that there's a Tehar Bal Tavor. And the other Rishon, who seems to take this basically approach to say that, you know, Karka Olam doesn't always apply to an Isha, is the Machamas that we just read before. In the first line, in that Machamas, basically said, but he takes it in a little different way. Machamas says, only Karka Olam applies is again when everything is against her will. But if she, right, basically has an interest in it, and his lashon is hella liba tina, if she is interested in this Maisa Bia, then there's no Karka Olam. Right, this is the Machanas again, page mem test in my version at least of the Dapei Arif, where he says the afilu le'abaye, right, who's the Karka Olam person, Mishkachas la tehari ba'al tabur, b'shehela liba tina. Basically says, again trying to justify the girsa, again, that second day in Tosos also justifies the girsa tehari ba'al tabur by giving a case where it is subject to an isha. So Muhammad says as well, that, you know, tehari ba'al tabur as a girsa makes sense, because there are cases, if shehela liba tina, if she is interested in the ma'isabiyah, then the heter of karka olam does not apply. So again, it's similar to Tosos in the sense that they don't think that a karka olam always applies to Nisha, but again, it's a little different take. Well, Tosos, well, the second day and Tosos, Pesachim say, oh, as long as she, you know, performs a hechsher, the kumva asay, that'll, you know, dictate that she's subject to tarav tavor. The Ramban seems to be saying, even if she doesn't take the kumva asay, you know, action in the, even the hechsher, as long as her mindset is that she's willing and interested in the ma'aseh bia, that undermines the entire heter of karka olam. So again, it's a different way of understanding the of how basically even an isha who has a passive role in the ma'aseh bia could be considered active, according to Tosos, active in terms of the heksher, according to Ramban, active in the sense of your willingness and your interest in the ma'aseh. It's hard to know how this relates to the other aspect of Muhammad's, right? Because Muhammad, again, is one who like the Muki Yosef, thinks that the Heter Karka Olam only applies in situations where they can force you to do it anyways. So unclear if the Muhammad is basically saying that, oh, because any time that it's only being done because you're interested, that must be a case where, you know, they weren't necessarily forcing you anyways. The question is, let's say a case where they could force you anyways, but you're still interested. So, seemingly, you know, basically it's like a, sort of like, you know, hard to know. For the Ramban, on the one hand, the Ramban would say that's karka olam. That should be karka olam because since they can force you anyways, the amount of shaf levera is going to be performed. So who cares what your kavana is? But yet the Ramban thinks also that as long as you're interested in it, that karka olam doesn't apply. So I'm not exactly sure how to square these two aspects of the Ramban. Yeah.
And that's a really tie from before about the different levels of onus, right? So maybe he is acknowledging those gradations in this way. Right? Uh-huh.
You're saying that even if they could force you, if you're going to be interested, then that's going to be a worse thing. Okay, very good. That's a good way of saying it.
I thought I was just taking the case of Hela Libatina as a sort of as a parallel to Hela Libatina. So a parallel case is to say that
what sense, though?
That was a case from...
No, that, you know, Hela Libatina on Ayin Hey, that's where, you know, he wants them to... Together, Amida Lefana Baruma, all these different versions of it. But why is that?
He wants it that even in court of a bias, even in the case of even for bias, there is a case of Harga Olam, it's Tari Balkan.
Yeah.
So, happens to be that's a case where.
I'm saying that he's basically saying. The only time karka olam applies is when she's not, you know, complicit. She's not interested. She's not, you know, a willing participant. If she's a willing participant, then heter's not going to apply. So all I was asking is that according to what the Ramban sets up in the next line, at the mechayev, at the, you know, say the lumdus of karka olam, that they can force you anyways. So once we're dealing with a case where they can force you anyways, then why does it matter whether she's a willing participant?
So Asher
was just answering. That the idea is because when you're a willing participant, that's a much more chamor, you know, violation of the avera. And perhaps it could be that we prefer you to die than to be a willing participant in that matter. I mean, the manushak doesn't apply.
I think in the case of Hela Libatina, not trying to stress the fact that she's a willing participant, trying to stress the fact that even though it's far older, there's nobody forcing her to do it, there's no honest. There's a case where you could find that Abaye would be mechayev for her to die in the case of which is physically karka olam, and so yeah, that happens to be the reason why she dies because there's a raw us. And it's given the case, it's a parallel because we find in the Gemara just for simplicity's sake.
There's no one
in the Gemara, it just happened with her, and then like that case of Abaye.
Okay. Adkan is our karka olam discussion. Hope in the last half hour here. Be able to go through at least some of the heter of Hanas Atzmos, right? Just the overall structure of all Shirim here. Again, we focus on all the different Harig Vayavurs. Then we went into the different exceptions of Harig Vayavur. Started with Karka Olam, and now the second main exception to the Harig Vayavur is the exception of Hanas Atzmos. So again, the lamdas of anas atzmo is one that basically when the anas, when the intention of the anas are basically for non-theological purposes, right? It's just for his own anah. So that transforms basically, and that impacts even the nature of the violation, right? When the idea is when the pressure, when the intention of the anas is for non-theological purposes, that dictates that even the violation is now no longer viewed as being a theological, you know, violation, and therefore that undermines the factor of chilul Hashem. So we pointed out in previous discussions, both of Averos Chamuros and Shmad, all these different cases that basically Hanas Atzma thereby, basically, because it only relates to that factor of chilul Hashem, it doesn't seem to impact the factor of Chamuros Isser, basically this heter, the scope of Hanas Atzma, basically functions as a very good test case to really ascertain whether the particular mechayev of, you know, of a particular, you know, Yehari Mayav, or be it Shmad, or Averos Chamuros, is Midin Chilul Hashem, which would thereby be subject to the heter of Hanas Asma, or really was it a factor of Chamurus HaIssa, which would thereby not be subject to Yehari, to the heter of Hanas Asma. So now, that was the background we've seen, we discussed Hanas Asma a lot, so let's now just within the discussion of Averos Chamuros, which we already discussed, a lot of the, you know, the general ideas and, you know, implications in terms of Chumras Iser versus Chilul Hashem. I'd like to discuss some of the other details in the sugya in terms of the application of Anas Atzma to the Averos Chamuros. We're going to see different versions of, you know, its application and certain details which are coming out of that. In terms of the, right, again, the application of Anas Atzma to the Averos Chamuros, we're going to see a whole range of shitas. Oh. We'll call it the first option is to say that the heter of Hanas Atzmo is limited to Gilui Arayos. So again, this is the approach of the Baal HaMor.
No, the Baal HaMor says that because there's no option.
Well, we get there. Actually, Lamaisa. Bottom line, according to this first option, is that Hanas Atzmo only applies to Gilui Arayos. Right? So the way the Baal HaMor sets it up is that because the Mechayev of, you know, the big three seem to be Chilul Hashem, therefore, fundamentally, the heter of Hanas Asma, which is you know, Chilul Hashem related, Hanas Asma should apply to the big three, but Lamaisa he only ends up applying it to Gilui Arayos, which again utilizes to explain why the heter of Hanas Asma applies to Esther, even though according to the Baal HaMor she was, you know, married, and therefore there was also a case of Arayos. Again, so Baal HaMor says, oh, the Hanas Asma applies to Arayos. But, he says, it doesn't apply to the other of the big two, other of the big three. It doesn't apply to Avodah Zarah, and it doesn't apply to Ritz Yichon, but for completely different reasons. He says that Hanas Asma doesn't apply to Avodah Zarah because there is no case. He says, theoretically, fundamentally, the heter of Hanas Asma should apply to Avodah Zarah, namely, insert, because its Mechayev would be Chilul Hashem. But he says there is no such case of Hanas Atzmo for Avodah Zarah. So we're going to see that other Rishonim are going to argue on that and say, what do you mean? Come up with easy cases of Hanas Atzmo by Avodah Zarah. And then we're going to, you know, analyze that machlokes in just a moment. Why exactly would Hanas Atzmo be defined in such a way, according to the Meiri, that it wouldn't be subject to Hanas Atzmo, while that Avodah Zarah would not be subject to Hanas Atzmo, while others argue, says, no, you can be magdir Hanas Atzma in such a way that it can apply to Avodah Zarah. So we'll get back to that in just a moment. And the other of the big three, which it doesn't apply to, is Ritzicha. Right? Because according to Baal HaMor, we discussed this in Pashiurim, because the Mechayev of Ritzicha, of the Har Layav for Ritzicha, is the Svara, and the Svara applies even B'malkam Hanas Atzma. Because the Svara of Maichazes applies whether or not the, you know, the intentions of the Anas are for Hanas Atzma or Lahaviro Aldas. So again, Shita the Baal HaMor, the first option in the sugya, is that Lemaisa, bottom line, is that Hanas Asma only applies to the Avera of Gilui Arayos. The second approach in the sugya is that of the Meiri, to say that no, the Heter of Hanas Asma applies Bain Gilui Arayos and Bain B'Avodah Zarah. He says, what do you mean, Baal HaMor, there are no cases of Hanas Asma for Avodah Zarah? I can give you a bunch of, you know, clear cases of Hanas Asma when it comes to Avodah Zarah, which are thereby, you know, dictate that the heter of Hanas Asma even applies to Avodah Zarah. So again, this is the Meiri and Ayindal on the base, Durum Aschil Shar and Durum Aschil Vachin. So here he says, he offers the following examples as examples of Hanas Asma for Avodah Zarah. So one of them is the case of, right, so Gemara Pesachim, Gemara Ksubas, Chananya, Mishal, Vazaria. says that since there, the purpose of the anas was not, he wasn't theologically driven, it wasn't lahavir al-adas, but rather was, in the Lashon of the Meiri, lahatil imaso. It's just to scare them. It's just to scare the Jews. And since, according to the Meiri, since the fact was, the koveya was not lahavir al-adas, rather it was for some other ulterior, it was for some ulterior motive, such as lahatil imaso, that is within the gedder of hanas atzmo, and therefore in l'chayev ha-yari la'yav will not apply. He says, similarly, another case, is Haman. Haman got Mordechai to bow down to him for his own personal kavod, and since it was for his own personal kavod, that is another example of hanas of avodah zarah, which is l'shem hanas atzma. But again, he agrees, and the Eri agrees with.
But why that is avodah
zarah? Oh, that's the other issue that the Rishonim discussed, but it was important in the pocket. Oh, that's the Ava Meira, the Ove Me Ava Meira. But the Meiri agrees to the Baal Mor that, right, the case of, you know, Ritzicha, though, is not subject to Yehari Vayavor. Sorry, it's not subject to the Heter of Nasa. Because, you know, the Svara of Machazis, again, applies in all cases, and therefore Ritzicha is always going to be subject to Yehari Vayavor. You're never going to have the exception of Hanasa. So now, just to take a step back and to analyze this Machokas between the Meiri and the Baal Mor in terms of whether you could have a case of Avodah Zarah, which is Hanas Atzma. Right, and just to point out that the Milchamas, again, from a different angle, we're trying to prove that the Heter of Hanas Atzma doesn't apply to the big three. Again, he says there are clearly cases of Avodah Zarah which are Hanas Atzma, and therefore the fact that, we'll get to these rises later on, the fact that, you know, the Heter of Hanas Atzma doesn't apply to Avodah Zarah, you know, proves that the Heter of Hanas Atzma doesn't apply to Avodah Zarah. Basically says, oh, I have cases such as Kol Misrapin, Halal Libatina, all these cases which there are, Halal Libatina is not Avodah Zarah, but he says the case of Kol Misrapin, for example, he says that's a case of Hanas Atzma, and yet the fact that Yari Mayavar applies there proves the Mechamas' general idea that the Heter of Hanas Atzma doesn't apply to any of the big three. Again, the Mechamas, like the Meiri, thinks that you can have cases of Avodah Zarah which are L'shem Hanas Atzma.
Said that?
The Machamas. The Machamas I have, I know, is the end of page Amud Nimbez in Ozbahadar. Do you ask for the Chachmei Atzarfatim? We'll read from it in just a moment. Right, so Machamas and Meiri both think that there are cases of Avodah Zarah which are defined as Hanas Atzma.
There's no Anash in that case.
Correct. We'll get back to that. Yeah, that's a big issue. So basically, the Machokia seems to be as follows. It's the big issue whenever you have a case, or let's say, where Hanas Atzma isn't like an exception, right? Where we say, oh, Yehari Vayavar only applies when it's Lahavir al Das, but not when it is the exception case of Hanas Atzma. The question is, what is the Koveya? Is it that you only have Yehari Vayavar when you have Lahavir al Das? Is the category really Lahavir al Das? Anything which is not Lahavir al Das is Memela, you know, subject to the exception of Hanas Atzma? Or no, the exception really is Hanas Atzma. Anything which is not defined as Hanas Atzmo is thereby, you know, included in the general category of Lahavir al Das. Again, because the question is the Koveya really Lahavir al Das? Because, to be clear, there'd be middle cases. Middle cases which are neither Lahavir al Das nor Hanas Atzmo. The question is, where do they fall? Where do they fall? Basically, because if you think that the Koveya is really Lavir al Das, the only time you have Yehari Vayavar was Lavir al Das, so anything which is not Lavir al Das, even in the middle category, Mamila, being the larger category of Hanas Atzmo, is not being subject to Yehari Vayavar. But if you think that, no, really the Koveya is Hanas Atzmo, and if the only time you're not going to have Yehari Vayavar is when the case is defined as Yehari Vayavar, the case is defined as Hanas Atzmo, so then the middle cases will Mamila be considered Lavir al Das. So again, the question is, what is the Koveya? And in Lundis, the way it comes out is, are you focused on Hanas Atzma as like an exception, as just a factor which neutralizes Kol Hashem? And then, right, according to that, you're only going to be focused on Hanas Atzma, that B'malkum Hanas Atzma, that undermines the Kol Hashem. Or are you really viewing, perhaps you can suggest, the Koveya is Lavir al Das, because really Lavir al Das is like an Ered Mechayev. Yeah, exactly. Awa them, but not to that extent. Not to say Lavir al Das is its own independent Mechayev, but rather that you need, let's say, in the case of Farhesia, or in the case of Eretz Chamura, so you need like two Mechayev. you need the Chil Hashem, let's say, deriving from the factor of Farhesio, stemming from the factor of you know, Shmad or the Averus Chamurus, and you need an additional factor of Avira Al Das. Again, if you think that you need that Avira Al Das is the factor, again, and Hanas Atma, according to this approach, is just the lack of Avira Al Das. So again, whether you're focusing on Anas Asma as just the exception, as the factor which neutralizes, or you're really focusing on Lavir Al Das as an additional Machayev, whereby Anas Asma is just the lack of that Machayev, so that will very much impact what the get of Anas Asma is. So now getting back. So the Meiri, the Baal Mor presumably thinks that the factor is the exception of Anas Asma. And the way the Meiri thinks, the way Baal Mor thinks of it, is that the way Hanas Atzma is defined, the way we define Hanas Atzma is where the primary intention is for the Avera to be violated. Where the primary intention is for the benefit of the Anas person. And therefore, he thinks, that any case, right, exactly, where the primary purpose of the Avera is for the benefit of the Anas. So says the Baal Mor. Therefore, he thinks, again, this additional assumption here, but he thinks that any case where where someone is forcing, you know, someone to be Ovid of Avodah Zarah, we don't define the primary purpose of that act to be the benefit of the Anas. That's only going to be defined as ancillary. Because it's only defined as ancillary, so therefore, you know, meaning the only time, basically you're never going to have a case of Hanas Atzma in the context of Avodah Zarah. But the Mechamas and the Meiri, and we'll show this in the Lashonos in a moment, seem to say, no, the focus is on Lahavira Al-Das. And anything which is not defined as Lahavira Al-Das, Mimeo is within the category of Hanas Atzma. Because their idea, presumably, is that, well, you need the additional factor Lavira Al Das to function as like an additional mechayev, as like an additional, you know, trigger of Chil Hashem. And therefore, as long as the kavana is not Lavira Al Das, it's some middle category, that's going to be basically placed within the category of Anas Asma. So if you look very closely at both the Mechamas and the Meiri, they seem to be basically focusing on the factor of Lavir al-Das, which again I think is Lishitaso, to their wider definition of Anas Asma, because once you think that anything that's not Lavir al-Das is considered Anas Asma, then you're able to basically include, let's say, these middle cases, like the case of Hananya, Mishael v'Azaria, where you have, let's say, where the middle category of Lahatzel e'maso. So Lahatzel e'maso, again, it's not Anas Asma, but it's not Lavir al-Das. But if you think that the Koveya is Lavir al-Das, anything which is not Lavir al-Das is Namil is going to be within this wider category of Anas Atzma. In line with this, Melchamas, again, Ahmed ibn Bayes over here, he has this line. He says, V'chol heicha delav la'avurehu kahnas Atzma dami. He explicates this idea, right, very clearly, that anything which is not Lavir al-Das is within the wider category of Anas Atzma. You don't need Hanas Atzma to actually be the primary, you know, kavana. As long as it's not Lavir Al Das, it's going to be within the exception of Hanas Atzma. And similarly, the Meiri in this piece also seems to be playing up the factor of Lavir Al Das. He says, "Dvarim elu kulam b'shem miskavim lahavir aladerech shebiarnu." It's all about when the kavana is lahavir. It sounds like he's saying that anything which is not lahaviro, memela is in the category of Hanas Atzma. So again, this question whether Hanas Atzma applies to Avodah Zarah, I think will have, you know, direct impact in terms of really what exactly is the lumdus of Hanas Atzma to begin with. Is it just an exception, or is Hanas Atzma really the lack of a second mechayev of lahaviro al das?
I guess the passion of the Gemara is exception, right?
Yeah, for sure. Exactly, for sure, right. For sure. Yeah, again, the part we're not going to get to is we want to develop this idea. I think the Rambam also holds the way. If you look at the way the Rambam in Hey Beis formulates the Heter of Hanas Atzma, again, it's backwards. Everything's backwards. I think he also thinks that it's not that Hanas Atzma is an exception, but rather that Lahavir Al Das is needed as a second Mechayev, and then B'malkum Hanas Atzma, you just lack that second Mechayev. So I think it's actually Mzuyik in the Rambam. And again, as you pointed out before, the fact that the Smak, Mordechai, again, think that Lahavir al-Das is its own mechayev, again, is an extreme, you know, manifestation of this idea of lahavir al das being its own mechayev. Now we're suggesting that for the norm to be shown him, it could be the lahavir al das not an independent mechayev, but it's needed as, like, you know, as, you know, as a second mechayev alongside the other fact. Fine. Okay. So right. So far, you have the Baal Mor who limits hanas asim to gila rayos. You have the meiri who extends it to both gila rayos and to Avodah Zarah, and we pointed out his extension to Avodah Zarah has implications in terms of his geder of anas asmo. And the third shita is the Shilta Giburim. We hope you saw it. Over here, it's Osa Aleph. Basically, Shilta Giburim applies the heter of anas asmo to all three. Right? Explicitly says in Osa Aleph here, it's in Bahani Shalosh Averos, Yishomrim Shalosh Averos Lanas Asmon Shari. So the big chiddush here is that not only does the heter of anas asmo apply to Arayas and to Avodah Zarah, but also to Ritzicha. So this is the extension that everyone else was not willing to make, as everyone else is saying, right? The Baal Mor and the Meiri explicitly were saying, what do you mean? Why does the factor of Hanas Atma impact the Svara? And if the Svara of Maichazis is at the basis of the Mechayev Yehar Le'av or for Ritzicha, so then basically you can't have Hanas Atma having any impact. So it seems to come out of the Shilta Giborim, and we've seen this in other directions. Basically, according to Shilta Giborim, it seems like that the, while perhaps the Svara is Mechayev Yehari Vayavor for Ritzicha, sorry, the Geder of Yehari Vayavor for Ritzicha is not defined by the Svara of Maichazis. So if you recall, we had this in the opposite direction, the Kesef Mishnah. Right, the Kesef Mishnah said, really, you can have Yehari Vayavor for Ritzicha even when the Svara doesn't apply. So again, you have the Kesef Mishnah, you have others who also disconnect the Geder Yehar Le'Yavor for Ritzicha from the Svara, from the opposite direction. The Kesef Mishnah was saying, you're basically, the Geder is going to be wider than the Svara. And even B'Makom, where the Svara doesn't apply, you're still going to have the Din of Yehar Le'Yavor, because, you know, that was a Kabbalah. Here we're saying, in the opposite direction, that we're going to basically not apply Yehar Le'Yavor for Ritzicha, even when the Svara does apply. I.e., B'malkam Hanas Atzma. So again, the Kesef Mishnah is an important parallel, because you see in Rishonim, at least, in between. Basically, you, in like early Mufarshim, who basically are saying that, you know, it's not so simple that the Geder of Yehari Le'Avor for Ritzicha is, you know, is completely tied down to the, you know, the scope of the Svara. But it's important to know if that's in the opposite direction. There, he was saying that all the Kabbalah is that it's more expansive than the Svara. So here, you're going to have to say, oh, there's a Kabbalah. Now that the Geder of Yehari Le'Yavor is not defined by the Svara. So it's important that the Shilta Giborim, you know, is saying that idea. Fine. So good? Okay. So the last Shita in the Sugya is that of the Ramban. Right? The Muhammad says that the Heter of Anas Atmo never applies to any of the big three. As we developed very early on in the Sugya, is the Ramban rejects the heter of rejects the application of Hanas Atmo to the Veras Chamuros, because he thinks the Mechayev of the of Yehari Le'Yavor for the Veras Chamuros is Chumrus HaYisr, which is thereby not subject to the heter of Hanas Atmo, because the heter of Hanas Atmo is all Chol Hashem related and doesn't apply to the factor of Chumrus HaYisr. But what I'd like to discuss in our remaining.
But what the Ramban will think in Feresia on all the other stuff?
No, it's not will apply, for sure. That's the Gemara. No, he's going to say the Gemara is very meduyak. It only applies Hanas Atzmo to Esther Farhes Yehavan. And he thinks, he develops Lashitaso, that Esther was not an Ajizish, and that's why the Gemara, you know, ignores the fact of Arayos, and he says, if she really wasn't an Erva, right, then Heter Hanas Atzmo would not apply. I'd like to discuss in the remaining time is the very important raya that the Mechamas brings. Right? The Mechamas brings a big raya to his shita. He says, I have a major proof that Hanas Atzmo doesn't apply to the big three. And that is the sugya of Hakol, two sugyas, Hakol Misrapin and Halel Liba. In the case of Hakol Misrapin, right, there's no Hanas. Right? It's all Hanas Atzmo, right? Because, you know, he wants to save himself. Yeah, in this case, again, it's not Hanas Atzmo of the Anas, we'll get back to that. It's the Hanas Atzmo of the person whose life is at stake, right? So both in the case of the Kol Misrapin, where the person is sick, in the case of Choli, right? And in the case of Halel Libo, in both those cases, right, the person whose life is at stake, the reason why we need, you know, he wants to violate the Isser is for his own Hana, either to save his life, or save his life physically, or to save his life because of his, you know, his lovesickness, halalikal tina. In both the cases, says the Rabban, again, what she tells us to what he was saying before, is that as long as it's not lahavir al das, that's considered to be in the geder of hanas atzmo. So what she tells us, he says, oh, all these cases are hanas atzmo, and yet we apply the din of yahar le'avor for the big three. So that's a raya mukhrachas, says the Rabban, that the heter of hanas atzmo doesn't apply to the big three. So the big question that all the Rishonim will try to discuss is how do you basically neutralize this Raya? How do you defend the Baal Mor and all those other Rishonim from this Raya to explain why in the world would the Heter of Hanas Atzmo basically not apply in these cases of a Kol Misrapin and Helali Batina if you think that generally the Heter of Hanas Atzmo does apply to the big three? So you're going to see there are three different, you know, suggestions in the Rishonim. I'll try to analyze them quickly. The first suggestion is suggested by the Meiri, Nayadalad Omen Aleph, Dimaraskal Vyesh Mechatshim. Again, this is the Meiri's second day of there. And he says that the heter of Anas Atzmo is limited to a case where you're dealing with an Anas who is a guy. Right? But if you're dealing with a case where the Anas is a Jew, or in the case of Kol Misrapin and Hela Libatina, where, you know, let's say the impetus, you know, to violate the Avera is coming from the person, from Yisrael himself. In these cases, the Heter of Anas Atzmo doesn't apply. Because it says, in these cases, even though it's Lahanas Atzmo of the Anas Yisrael, or it's Lahanas Atzmo of the, you know, the person whose life is in danger, those cases are considered Kavanas HaAvera. That's the line in the mirror. I'll read it inside. Va'oda Ani Omer, Shelo Chilku Bein Hanas Atzman L'Chavanas HaAvera, Ela begoy haba la'anas es Yisrael. Right, the only time you have this heter of anas atzmo is when it's anas goy. Well, Yisrael bechavero, but anas Yisrael, o la'atzmo, in the case of Helali Batuna or Kol Misrapin, afal pi shetivo mavil tach, hakol etzlo kavanas ha'avera. It's all considered the kavanas ha'avera. So again, what's the idea here? Why in these other cases of Hanas Atzmo do we consider them Kavana of Lahavira? So to suggest something which applies to most cases, but not all. So in most cases, let's deal with the case of Helali Batina and the case of an Anas Yisrael. So those cases, you can claim that basically the higher standards, you know, subjects which Yisraelim are subject to, basically dictate that basically, right, any, you know, Yisrael who's basically saying, either to another Yisrael or to himself, because he got, you know, lovesick over Navera, basically we're saying, that we're not going to allow that excuse. The fact that you let yourself, you know, either become obsessed with an Navera, or the fact that Yisrael is basically, is, you know, telling another Yisrael to violate one of the Averos for his own Hana, that Hana, when it comes to Yisrael, is considered a kavana to be over. Because that Yisrael is subject to the Avera itself, you can't say, oh, I'm not looking to be over the Avera, I just want to basically cause this Avera to be violated for my own Hana. Since you, the Yisrael, either as the Anas or as the Helali Batina, since you are subject to the Avera itself, you don't have the excuse of saying, oh, I just want it for my own Hana. Because since you're subject to the Avera, you wanting to basically cause the violation of the Avera for your own Hana is basically a way of saying that you basically don't care about the Avera and therefore it's considered Kavana La'Avera. It's only in the context of an Anas guy who's not subject to the Averas can we say, oh, basically there's no theological implications there. But when it comes to an Anas Yisrael, of course there are theological implications because the Anas yourself, you are subject to Taryag, and therefore you're trying to violate the Avera is considered to be, you know, a breach, a theological breach as well. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
It's going to come up a lot.
For sure. Yeah. So while this works for Anas Yisrael, this works. Again, you're going to claim it's not theological. You're trying to get another Jew to be over in Avera. That makes sense. Helali Batina also makes sense. You became obsessed with the Averas, and now your life's in danger. But, you know, if you had a proper mindset and you had a proper perspective towards the Averas, you know, the Ibn Ezra by Los Achman. If you have a proper perspective towards the Avera, you wouldn't get sick over it because you consider, you know, untouchable. The problem, which I'm not sure how to deal with, is how the Meiri applies this to the context of Kol Misrapin. Because there's a case where seemingly you're like physically sick. It happens to be that the Avera, you know, which can cure you, is one of the big three. I'm not sure exactly why even in that case it's considered a Kavanas Avera. And truly, even that's the one that Meiri is focusing on. When he says, Afal Pisha Tivo Mavio Lakach, I'm assuming the Tevo he's referring to, is when you actually get sick. So I'm not sure. So again, why this explanation for the Meiri works in most cases, that, you know, because, you know, there is the cases of, you know, Anas Yisrael and Helali Botino, which seems to be Anas Asma, really there are theological implications there. Again, don't seem to work so well for the Hakol Misrapin case, where you can say there are no theological implications at all. Okay, basically that's the Meiri, the first defense of the Raya, of the Meiri, basically to limit the heter of Anas Asma to the case of Anas Gai, while these other cases are not Anas Gai. Second defense is offered by the Ran Imsach, right? In Vav Menalach, Dapei Arif, Tibro Maskel, Vekasha. So there, the Ran makes a very subtle chiluk, which is very important. He says, the only time the heter of Anas Asma applies, in a case like Esther, where, from the perspective of the Jew is not benefiting from the Aveira itself, the Jew is benefiting from the Hatzalah. In the case of Esther, she's not benefiting from the Gila Raios. She'd prefer that not to happen. Her benefit is only from the fact that she's being saved. Masha Inke, in the case of Helali Botina, in the case of Kol Misrapin, there the benefit of the Jew itself is coming from the Aveira itself. The Aveira is not to, you know, or the Aveira at hand is not to be over, you know, Raios. The case of Helali Botina, the case is not to be, you know, Oved Avodah Zarah in this manner. And the benefit to the Jew is the violation itself. So says the Ran, that's the chiluk. The only time Anas Asma applies is when the Hana of the Jew is not directly connected to the Avera. But if, in the case of Helali Botina, Kol Misrapin, the benefit of the Jew is directly connected to the Avera, then the heter of Anas Asma doesn't apply. And the idea seems to be that from the perspective of, again, Chil Hashem, right? Hanas Atzma is all about Chil Hashem. Seems to be that only time we think that you're able to, the Hanas Atzma is able to neutralize the Chil Hashem is when the Jew is benefiting from a side ancillary point. But when the Jew is benefiting from the Aveira itself, then even though there might be a factor of Hanas Atzma, the fact that a benefit is being derived from the Aveira itself, that is Mechal Shem Shamayim. And therefore the Heter is not going to apply. I'm just going to just finish up with one more minute and then we'll get back. And the last defense is offered by this Shilta Giburim, again in this piece, and also the first day in the Meiri and Sanhedrin. And they say, something pretty remarkable, they say, there's no Raya from the case of Misrapin, because the reason why there's no Heter in the case of Kol Misrapin is because it's a case of Safek Pikuach Nefesh. The fact that the doctors tell you that you're going to die if you don't take this, that's only Safek Pikuach Nefesh. The only time the Heter of Anas Asma applies is when there's a Vade Pikuach Nefesh, like in the case of an Anas. So there are two major assumptions to this approach of the Shilta Giburim and the Meiri. Assumption number one is just the fact that, you know, the Choli, what doctors tell you, is only considered Safek Pikuach Nefesh, and the Anas Goy is considered Vade Pikuach Nefesh. That's assumption number one, which is, again, in the Meiri and other places, discusses, you know, his lack of trust of doctors. So presumably it's Lishitoso to, you know, his general presence. And it's a big issue about, you know, the Nemanos of Rofim, so it relates to that larger issue. That's assumption number one. Assumption number two, and this is the more Lumbish assumption, is that the factor of Hanas Atzma doesn't completely neutralize the Chil Hashem at play. Because if you thought that the factor of Hanas Atzma completely undermined the factor of Chil Hashem, so then you would say, but Makom Hanas Atzma, right, so there's no Chil Hashem, and now there's a factor of Safek Pikuach Nefesh. So B'chol Torah Kula, Safek Pikuach Nefesh can do a lot of things. Generally, it's even treated as Vade Pikuach Nefesh. So again, if Chil Hashem at play was neutralized, so then you'd have the Safek Pikuach Nefesh at work. What seems to be going on is that the Meiri and the Shulta Giborim seem to think that Anas Atzmo only partially mitigates the factor of Chil Hashem. And it's just that, meaning when you have the Vadeh Bikoach Nefesh, the Vadeh Bikoach Nefesh can now trump that mitigated, that lower level Chil Hashem. But since there still is a lower level, Chil Hashem, even after the factor of Chil Hashem, even after the factor of Anas Atzmo, so then B'mokom, Sadeh Bikoach Nefesh is not enough to trump that. So it's, again, it's important, because the way I always assumed is that no, B'mokom Anas Atzmo, there's no Chil Hashem at all. Because the whole point is that the entire violation is not viewed in theological terms. But according to this third approach, third defense of Shulta Giborim and that Deya and the Meiri, he seems to be taking a very important assumption that the factor of Anas Atzmo doesn't completely mitigate the factor of Chil Hashem. It only partially does, and therefore only works B'tzirah of the Vadeh B'Kuach Nefesh at hand. So we'll walk to Mincha, because I think...